Thanks for coming, everybody. Welcome. And thanks to Rod that he invited me under the umbrella of University of Human Unity to make this exploration on the Gayatri Mantra, and very particularly in the sense traveling backwards in time, so to say, every week, starting from where is the Gayatri Mantra at present, how is it used, maybe also in some simple way, and a little bit touch only how really the Indian tradition would still use it, because they will use it in a more complex way than just somebody alone in a yoga center singing these few verses. And, but the idea is, where is it really coming from? And it is from the Rig Veda, and somebody knows it is, this is a book with 1,000 mantras, and one mantra has been taken out of this collection, and even in the middle of one hymn, which actually has 18 verses, and exactly mantra 10 is the Gayatri that has been just taken, so to say, already in the Yajurveda, and later on, so in the Yajurveda it will be always combined with more other verses, which somehow explains the context. But as it has come down to us now in the Gayatri, and to most of the students nowadays, they will just know the Gayatri, and some masters are always appreciating it. The gurus of the last century, they also say it is something really special. But nobody, so to say, is reflecting on the greater context. And since I was busy now for many, many years with the Rig Veda, and I have come across, of course, so many mantras to the sun, and I also came across that hymn, I thought, let me look closer at it. And since in the Rig Veda, we would not go to the summit without the flame, Agni, which is the beginning and end of everything, so to say, in the Rig Veda. So I thought, let me start with a hymn to Agni as an introduction, as an invocation. And I took deliberately a relative simple one, but also it is in the Gayatri meter, because that will be also one of our topics. Gayatri is a goddess, but actually it is a meter. And in the Veda you will find thousands of verses in that meter, not just the one Gayatri. So it is in that meter, and I have chosen also deliberately a hymn by the Rishi Vishwamitra from his book, because he occupies one book of the Rig Veda, book 3, with 62 hymns. And exactly the last hymn is actually the hymn where the Gayatri comes. And in a way it's also interesting, because the one who has collected these hymns, he wouldn't start with a hymn to the sun. So the hymns to the sun in all the different books of the Rig Veda usually come towards the end, because before all the other gods have to be shown. And first of all, Usha, the divine dawn. Because without the dawn, the sun is not arriving. She is preparing the path for him. So in that way, it's also very interesting, which I discovered only recently, if I look closely, because I know in the Rig Veda also, before this hymn, the Gayatri Mantra, the hymn which comes before is exactly a hymn to Usha. And it just happens so that in the Secret of the Veda, Sri Aurobindo has analyzed some of the hymns, and he has exactly analyzed this hymn to Usha, which also can give us some light in the connection that also in the Gayatri. And so I start just with one simple hymn of Vishwamitra. He has made, actually composed, or we could say received, 27 hymns to Agni, the fire. So the first 27 hymns of his selections are all to Agni. But they are in different meters, and they are in different styles, and they are, some they seem to be more sacrificial, how we call it, ritualistic, because he uses the imagery of the sacrifice. But even here, what I have chosen, there are a few names which the Rig Veda always uses, Hotar, the invoker, and so on. But even there it says, Agnir Diya Samrinvati. and ghee is here in the Gayatri Mantra, also it will come, our thoughts. So he says the fire is joining with our thought. And in the next verse he says, Agnirtiya sachetati, the fire is conscious with our thought. So there is an intimate relation with the thought and with that wakeful energy in us. So this would be the 11th hymn of Vishwamitra to Agni in the Gayatri meter. I will chant in the original, and since we have a lot of translations of Agni hymns, especially Rudra, I will read afterwards also this translation. Agnir hota purohito advarasya vijarshani sa veda yajnam amushak sahadya vad amartya ushik tu tashchanurhita agnir dhya samrimpati agnir dhya sachetati ketur yajnasya purviya artam hi asya tarani agnim sunum sanashrutam sahaso jatam vedasam vahnim deva akrunvata adapiyah pura eta visham agnir manushita turni ratah sada nama Sahvan Vishwa Abiyujah Kratur Devanam Amrita Agnis Tuvi Shrapas Tam Abhi Prayamsi Jetati Dashvan Ashnoti Martiyah Kshayam Pavaka Shochish Pari Vishwani Sudita Agne Rashyama Manmadi Vipraso Jata Vedasa Agne Vishwani Varya Vajeshu Sani Shamahi Tuve Devasa Evri. Since I just made some discovery, which one can make many things all the time when one studies the secret of the Veda or the Veda, and Rod, you also have mentioned already often Shirvinda's translation to the hymns to the mystic fire, they are in themselves a poetry. They are not literal translation, and Shirvinda has a kind of almost metrical language. So here, for example, in this translation, the last line which I just read, Tuve devasa erere. Shravinda translates, in thee have moved towards us the gods. You could feel it's almost identical in the chandas. Fire is our all-seeing priest of the call, our vicar set in front in the pilgrim rite. He knows the uninterrupted course of the sacrifice. He is the immortal, the carrier of the offering, the aspirant, the messenger settled in the rapture. The fire joins with our thought. Agni wakes to knowledge, companioning our thought. He is the supreme ray of intuition in the sacrifice. It is he who crosses through to man's grove. Fire, the son of force, who hears the things that are eternal, knower of the birth, the gods created as a carrier flame. The inviolable who goes in front of the human peoples, the fire is a swift chariot that is ever new, overpowering all assailants. The fire is the will of the gods, never crushed, filled with the multitude of his inspirations. By this bringer of delights, the mortal who gives, reaches, and possesses the house of the purifying light. May we, by our thought, possess around us well established all the things of the fire. May we illumine seers who know, may we be illumined seers who know all things born. O fire, we shall win all desirable things in thy plenitudes. In thee have moved towards us the gods. So the idea is that in the Veda we would have to see it in this context. The sun is not just invoked like that. And also there is, so to say, there's a preparation. There are other gods and powers involved. In the Gayatri Mantra, now I have just written the plain mantra, which maybe many of you know, and which maybe for the last 10-20 years we can hear it from a music shop. Maybe when we go to Pondicherry, we will hear some tune with it. Yes, or on the phone.
In the temples.
Mm-hmm. Or in the temples, they might play this.
Play it again.
Like a chapa. But there is also what is called the Gayatri Upasana, the tradition. I haven't met somebody yet. Actually, yesterday I met somebody who came to me who's interested in some Sanskrit and Veda. So he's chanting, at least he's chanting the Gayatri Shiras. It's called the head of the Gayatri. And in that case, there will be, to this mantra, there will be something added here, to Bhurbhuvasva, and at the very end. And that's also interesting, as if, so the later tradition who has taken this mantra is trying to put it in a context. They create a kind of new context. And usually we know Bhurbhuvasva. What is that? Many people, I don't know if they are aware, I will go into it today. These are the first three worlds in the Puranic description of the seven worlds. And in the Upanishads, in the Purana, we have a correspondence in the principles of consciousness. So the seven principles: physical, vital, mental, knowledge, truth, ananda, consciousness and bliss. So in this system of the Puranas, it is Bhurbhuvasva. Then it continues with Maha, the vast, Jana, for Ananda, that which is creative, and Tapa, the power of consciousness, and Satyam, the truth. And I wonder whether it would be worthwhile maybe also to write this down. Who is familiar of you with these principles? I'm sure many of you are. But I think it's very important to see that context. So usually what I translated here, just to give a first touch on the mantra, home, earth, mid-world, heaven, or world of light, because Swar has many connotations. And Sri Aurobindo explains very much in detail that the earth and the mid-world and the heaven, here even in the Veda it would be called literally like that, these are, so to say, root sounds. They are also called dhyaratis, the great invocations. They are almost seed mantras to invoke these principles. And Sri Aurobindo will emphasize earth, mid-world, heaven. These are not just objective worlds. There is always a corresponding plane in the human being. So they are also our physical consciousness and our vital consciousness and our mental consciousness. Om is also very important. In the Rig Veda, it does not come. It does not yet, is not used or known, that mantra. So when we analyze it, we know, I just can say in general, you know, in India, Om is used in front of every mantra, but Om is the fourfold Brahman, usually they say. So Om relates also to the waking consciousness, to the dream state, to the causal state, and to the transcendent. So you could say, starting with this is really like, you mean, everything. You want to encompass everything. You want to include everything when you say Om. And then Pur, the word for the becoming, this is a root in Sanskrit. Bhu means to become. And Bhuvak also means to become. It's just the same root, just it's slightly modified. And Sri Aurobindo usually would call this world of formal becoming. And this is, one could say, the astral becoming. But he actually never says that the inner planes are really worlds of evolution. So he says it's also the becoming which is, so to say, intermediate to the physical level. So everything what becomes here is pre-shaped here, but the real evolution is going on here, on the earth level. And Swah is the shining, the sunlight. And I always understood it like that when I came across this mantra many, many years ago. So if you say Om, earth, or physical, vital, mental, sun, is it not as a kind of opening? You are actually ascending. You are opening up to the light. And so you open your physical being, you open your vital being, you open your mental being. Because tat savitur varenyam hargo. Actually, it says tat vainyam pargo grammatically. This is all neuter. That most desirable bharga, as if that is still beyond these three, in a sense, or the culmination to which it leads. That most desirable bharga of the divine sun, on that we meditate. And it's also interesting when we look at the word bharga. Today I looked in the dictionary, I thought maybe brazier is also the same root. But I thought Mother uses this prayer, burning brazier, but in the dictionary it says it means copper melting. So that's that sound bri. In German we have a goddess, Brigitta, which is also used in English and French, Brigitte. So it's also interesting to see that this actually in Germany means burning, flaming, you know, heating. So it's also interesting for me to see why the Rishi took that word, because he also knows the word jyoti and other words for light in the Veda. So he uses this word, which here I have translated as radiance, to keep at least some sound of this here, but it's a question what he wants to say. As if he wants to show the dynamic aspect of that light, of that sun. It's burning, it's heating, it's fire, it's part of the tapas maybe. And also when we study the Veda, we know that Savitri is the form of the sun god Surya. But so if the Rishi uses Savitri, that means he is emphasizing the creative aspect of the sun, which Aurobindo would call, he is the causal godhead, the godhead of the Vijnana. So Savitri also is many times by other scholars translated as the vivifier, the impeller, This is all in that root su. It means to impel, to push, but also to produce. And I have made a few copies, which I thought somebody we can hand out at the end, where Sri Aurobindo explains this root also. It is related to the Indian root srishti. Srishti means also to let go, to let loose out of yourself. But so this creation is something comes out and it has a push to realize itself. But Sri Aurobindo still prefers usually to stay with the meaning of creator. But then when we go on in the third pada of this Gayatri mantra, the third foot, we have actually this root jut, prachut, which means to impel, to activate. Which at the same time we can also translate in a certain sense as inspire, because it is that light which inspires us. So it's also interesting when, since we also incorporate Sanskrit in the exploration, it's always interesting to see also tea is the root here for meditation, but di also comes here, and dio is the plural form of tea. Because ti basically means to hold. To hold. So one could actually translate dimahi also may I hold or may I receive our meditation. That most desirable burning light, energy, radiance of the divine creator sun. And may he know, he the sun, Prachodaya, activate, impel, inspire our thoughts. And one could also dwell on this, on the thoughts, because what kind of thoughts did the rishis mean at that time? This is long ago. There was no rational mind yet developed in humanity even. What do they mean with thought? In the Veda, it even goes so far that he is the goddess. And Sri Aurobindo usually, he goes like that, he writes it in capital letter, thought, to show it is not a common thought. A thought who does not know. It's a thought which already needs a certain level of awareness. So traditionally, when we study the Gayatri Mantra on the website or in some books, they will say, may this sun inspire our buddhi, they will say. But since it's the plural form, I will stay with thoughts. And Sri Aurobindo actually says that in the singular, di is more this capacity of understanding of body. And in the plural, it really relates to all the thoughts, which, you know, are, so to say, coming from this capacity of body.
Yes.
So he says in the singular, dhi, as the cup is the, is, you could say it's the Sanskrit Vedic word for later what is called the buddhi, the intelligence or the understanding, in its capacity to hold and to receive. And when it's used in the plural form, like in the Gayatri Mantra, our dhiya, it says it relates more to the each thought, to the soul process also. As of course you can say that each of our thoughts should function on that level, or be in touch with this capacity.
You know, I will come to this because this will have consequences.
In our class.
No, it has consequences because of the holding, no? And whatever you do, yes, you have to understand the thought, you have to hold the thought, and then you can lean against it. So there is a kind of process which is going on behalf of that holding. You do it in painting, you have to hold the thought, you have to know how, yes, to put colors together. Yes. On behalf of that, your action can be executed. You can, the body can then lean into it.
Yes. It's actually quite interesting because when you go into detail, so you have tea in the Veda, you have also swadhi, as a name of a goddess, and actually it is Su-a-di, which means to perfectly hold. And when you go into the Patanjali yoga system, the highest levels of the yoga actually, after asana, pranayama, pratyahara, drawing in the centers, is dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. And all these three roots, they're actually all connected with the basic form, because the basic form is dha, which is simply to hold. And three, you know, for dharana, which is like holding in the sense of also carrying. And then you have dhyana, which is just another form, dhyana, it's a participle form of dhyana. And some adi, actually, how it is analyzed. It means, again, actually here it means to perfectly hold. Sri Aurobindo translates this, he who deep meditates, or it's also a name of the sun god itself in one way. The sun god is also called Swati. So he says, he who perfectly places his thought. Because he is the cause of the Godhead, who creates everything. And he also has the word, he is the logos. So he tells everything to be in its place originally. He is the original thinker. So when we come to this samadhi, I also found it interesting, because samadhi means actually you hold yourself together, just completely, to be gathered. It doesn't literally say you are in trance, how it is usually translated, but you are completely gathered and hold yourself. But as I say, it's really interesting that all these three are basically coming from one root and are just, so to say, deepening states or intensifying states. And you have similar things in the Rig Veda also. So this would be, say, the basic meaning. And the difficulty in this mantra I find myself, it is from the construction, syntax-wise, it's not easy. Usually the rishis, when you have a mantra like the Gayatri, you have actually three padas, three sections, and each one has eight syllables. That is the Gayatri meter. But here, and usually the rishi keeps also the grammar usually inside the padas, most of the time. But here there is, it overlaps. And then it's more difficult to, when you chant this mantra, to really understand it with the mind at that very moment. Because actually it means that most desirable light of the divine sun. But there would be a way, because we also come at the end of our sessions to Sri Aurobindo's Gayatri, and his is very clear-cut in that way. It says, Tat Savitur Varam Rupam. So here he puts Varam Rupam, and then he says, Jyoti Parasya Dhimani. So he doesn't say the Bharga of the Divine, he just says the Light of the Supreme, because that's what it is. And then may he illumine us with the truth. Here it says, may it impel our thoughts. But as a help for those who really would this mantra and want to be conscious of the meaning, one could also say, on that of Savitri's most desirable form, you could say, or energy, on the radiance of the divine, let's meditate. This would be as if, how you would call it, as a kind of comment on that. So on that most desirable of the subject, on the radiance of the divine, let us meditate. Let's receive that. Let's open to that, because we have already said Bhur Bhuva Swa. So we are actually making an ascending movement. You could also say an opening movement. And this is, that is usually, they will say, this is an indication of the transcendent, the later gurus. But literally, it's really grammatically, it still relates to that, Tatsar. But in a way, you can also say, because this tattva renyam is obviously something still higher.
I have a thought about the higher thought.
Yeah.
I think that the higher thought doesn't have an object. I mean, this is one of my themes in the philosophy. The higher thought is a beholding of the thing itself, its essential reality. So there's an identity between the thing and its essence, which is one. They are one. So that thought doesn't have any object. It's not objective thinking. It is holding the thing itself in consciousness, so that there is no difference. So if you think about the light, the luminosity of the beholding of the God, or the beholding of the sacrifice, or the beholding of the holding itself, then you're conscious of that reality of being. And it's not something outside of the consciousness of it.
Yes.
So our normal thinking has to do always with objects. We think about that board and those words on that board, and that's quite a different, more linear thinking. And thinking about the meaning of words,
yes,
is different from beholding the meaning of the words.
Right, right. Could one maybe even say there's already a contact, or conscious contact, between that what you call thought and consciousness? Because even in the hymn with Agni, it says, Agni joins our thought. And even literally it says, he's aware with our thought.
So the difference between thought and consciousness is a different subject.
Well,
we'll try to go there.
Yes. Yeah, because that the thing now, because we usually, that's how this mantra is given to us, and how much we can think about it, or just say something similar that means, okay, this is the supreme, and he should illumine our buddhi. That's usually what is said, but you could really go into a whole deeper understanding, and that's exactly actually what happens in the Veda. There's a whole, you could almost say, a paradigm around this, and so this is actually what we are trying to do, you know, this. Every week to go move towards that. But now it's still interesting to see also what has this tradition, for example, the Gayatri Shirsha, Gayatri Upasana, done, because usually when we use the word Gayatri, everybody thinks actually about this here, the Gayatri Devi. You know, because that is in India, the spiritual tradition and religion also has developed. It wants an iconography. The Veda doesn't use iconography. It uses it to a very slight degree. There is the bow of Rudra, but the goddesses are never. Maybe even Bach is said she's like a spear, but it doesn't mean she holds anything in her hand, all these attributes. So there's a different mind which wants to envision also the human form, and also has all these other views. And it's also interesting, this came to me only recently, because the five heads, you know. So usually people always say, very strange to me, because to me it doesn't mean that at all. Five head means it is the zenith and the four directions. I thought it could also mean, of course, the five koshas, because she is also called the sevenfold mother. But I started to have other thoughts also, because Sri Aurobindo emphasizes that in the age of the mystics, there's another approach and there's another system. And when the rational mind grows, there is this need of systematization and also simplification. And because actually, in fact, in the Veda, this truth in that sun, he has five powers.
Five Shaktis.
Five Shaktis. So they are Mahi, which is just a general word, it's the vast, which is a name for the truth. And there is Ila, which is the revelation, which you just mentioned. Actually, also you have the sight of this. The thought is living in that sight. And then you have Saraswati, which is the inspiration. And then you have Sarama, which he calls the intuition. And you have Dakshina, you have the discernment. So I was wondering, because prior to Yosu, she is called Saraswati, which is still a very important goddess in the Veda. And also she is called Savitri, which is directly the power of the sun god. Whether these five heads could also still be a reminder of this. Because that's what it looks to me in the Gayatri Shirsha, there is a kind of simplification, but it wants, in simple terms, wants to refer to something vaster, which in the Veda is always very elaborate, and the experience is never abstract, it's always concrete, and it gives the whole image of everything. But here it is not like that. So there is even, I did this, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I started to write down of some book, something on this Gayatri Upasana. You have, along with these seven worlds, which here I only wrote three worlds, you have 7 meters mentioned, you have 7 rishis mentioned, and 7 gods, which is in a way tries to actually refer back to that vast paradigm, probably, which is the Rig Veda, in a sense. So, but as I say, in a very concise way. So this systematization and simplification. And to this topic, actually, there is also, I thought this is interesting, because there is, for example, I made here a few copies of the Doctrine of the Mystic, which is published in the old edition of Hymns to the Mystic Fire and in the newer edition of The Secret of the Veda. And here Sri Aurobindo gives more than in a nutshell, he gives quite an overview of the Vedic imagery in the world. But how does he introduce it? And I just read this because he's emphasizing this difference between what was the mystic and what was later the thinker. And thinker, that's also interesting, the rishis are also called Thira in the Upanishads and in the Veda, and the gods are also called Thira. So they are called thinkers in that sense, but not in a rational sense. And I was wondering whether even this Gayatri Shirsha, how the mantra is used later in this simplified way, is already a work of a later mentality, so to say. I just read one para, where Sri Aurobindo starts this, the doctrine of the mystics. The Veda possesses the high spiritual substance of the Upanishads, but lacks their phraseology. It is an inspired knowledge as yet insufficiently equipped with intellectual and philosophical terms. We find a language of poets and illuminates to whom all experience is real, vivid, sensible, even concrete, not yet of thinkers and systematizers to whom the realities of the mind and soul have become abstractions. Yet a system, a doctrine there is. But its structure is supple, its terms are concrete. The cast of its thought is practical and experimental, but in the accomplished type of an old and sure experience, not of one that is crude and uncertain because yet in the making. Here we have the ancient psychological science and the art of spiritual living, of which the Upanishads are the philosophical outcome and modification, and Vedanta, Sankhya, and Yoga the late intellectual result and logical dogma. But like all life, like all science that is still vital, it is free from the armored rigidities of the reasoning intellect. In spite of its established symbols and sacred formula, it is still large, free, flexible, fluid, supple, and subtle. It has the movement of life and the large breath of the soul. It's interesting that Srivindra here almost, I feel he puts it even in very strong terms in a sense, maybe just to make people aware of the difference. Because he also says it is, how do you say, it's not primitive seeking, because that's what the Western scholars thought. They thought this very ancient language and spirituality is new, meaning it has no tradition, it's a fumbling, it's getting glimpses, and it's unsystematized and so on. So he says, no, it is in the accomplished type of a tradition, it follows that. And one sees that all the time, because the Veda also has terms. So he says, it's interesting, he says it doesn't have philosophical terms. But we come to this also in our exploration in the next weeks. There is also Mati. For example, Mati is the thought, and the Rishi says many times, from my heart, I speak my Mati to you. So as if Mati is the thought which comes from the heart, and I felt Ti is something maybe more which really relates to the mind, as the capacity of holding. And this Mati, for example, has seven forms, so that it's a whole science of that. But the Rigvedic Rishis, yes, they are not logical systematizers. They don't say in one hymn, they count, they say all what Matis they have, no? But if you study many hymns, you will see you have Amati, which means not thinking, unconscious. You have Sumati, which means right thinking, and that is even the thinking of the sun god. His Shakti is identified with Sumati. And then you have also Anumati, to follow a thought, and Pramati, to forethought, project the thought. And there is one other one, is Aramati, which means actually Ara is like the lotus, but in the sense of the petals are like spokes. So Srivindra calls it dynamic thought, in one hymn where it's translated. So you have seven terms all related just to that. So in a way there is a system, and there is not even a system of only concrete symbols, of the fire, the water, because to that also we will come. Because what is really also interested in this, maybe we still have some time, what is also interested in this Gayatri Shiras, so this mantra taken, so to say, out of the context is prefixed with all the invocatory words of the seven worlds. And at the end, so this is the first section of the mantra, the second section is the Gayatri, and the third section is something more. And maybe I will just read these terms that you get an idea. I'm sure in India we don't have somebody here, I don't know, who knows that. Do you know it, this tradition of Gayatri Shiras?
No.
Or Gayatri Upasana, because there are whole books written about that. So they will give breathing exercises, they will invoke Vishnu, which is interesting, they will not invoke Ganesh, they will not invoke the fire, they invoke Vishnu, because Vishnu is for them the supreme. But interestingly, in the Veda, actually Vishnu is also the supreme, but it is not said in front, it is kept more on the back. So they will start the mantra like that, Om Bhu, Om Bhuvah, Om Swah, Om Maha, Om Jana, Om Tapah, Om Satya, Om Tat Savitur Varinyam, Bhargo Divasya Dhimahi, Diyo Yoda Prajodaya. So let us meditate on that splendor. which should impel our thoughts. And then it ends very significantly with just, you could almost say, metaphors, how you want to call it, Om Apu Jyoti Raso Vritta Amritam Brahma Bhur Bhuva Suvar Om. Om the waters, Om the light, Rasa the essence, the nectar, Amritam the immortality, Brahma Bhur Bhuva Suvar Om. And what is important here is this term Brahma, because in this paradigm still Brahma is not just this vague absolute which usually people think it is in the Upanishads. Sri Aurobindo also there he translated as the eternal, because the word Brahma in the Veda means the mantra, and it means the soul consciousness from which the mantra is actually arising. So Sri Aurobindo translates it many times as soul, thought, wisdom, word, and sometimes even as soul. So here, so if you say Om, the waters, the light, the nectar, the immortality, the Brahman, what is it? But I just found it very interesting also in the sense, because it is a kind of summing up. You know, the most essential. And in our journey we will see really what happens in the Gayatri Mantra in the context. That there are powers which are invoked before you invoke the sun. But also when the sun is invoked, the sun has also other names. For example, the sun is called Aya, the enjoyer. And usually it is after the illumination only comes the enjoyment of the Ananda. And then also he invokes the other gods, the sons of Aditi, Mitra and Varna, and Soma is invoked. So here we can see this is that, and the apas are actually all the seven planes, because in the Vedic imagery, the whole existence is an ocean, and the superconscient is the superconscient, the light ocean, and the inconscient is the ocean of the night. And the waters are, so to say, the energies which form all these planes in between. So it's that sub existence which goes into its opposite and moves back, and these, and the waters connect it all. But there are also the upper waters which are veiled, which are held back by the kavara. So that means usually one image in the Veda is the waters have to be freed. And so in that sense the water means also that you get access to the higher hemisphere of existence. And maybe we will carry on next time going into this bit more into detail. And because this higher existence, which is actually Swar, is the transition or the first manifestation of the higher existence of Sat, Chit, Tapas, Ananda. And the Rishi here in the mantra prays to, opens to Bhur Bhuva Swa. And only when the seers enter into the world of the sun, all these waters of the higher existence start to flow down to the lower existence. So this is very typical Vedic imagery. And so I thought, well, maybe there might be a reason why he chose that seer who has made this mantra, puts it all in a nutshell. But the question is for us, is that enough for us? Yeah, even now maybe I have already given you a lot of ideas and thoughts, and or would that mantra just be enough? Because what also happens is when we sing a mantra, which it becomes very you know, light in the modern tradition, and I traveled now for a few years in Europe in the yoga centers, and some teachers always give them also the Gayatri and many other mantras. And people like to sing them, and there will be many tunes, and it's beautiful, but we also know it is not easy to hold the meaning in your consciousness. And how can we work on that? Or do we need that? Or are we, for example, the perfect singer who knows Raga and Sahitya, you know, who has mastery of the raga, of the sound, and of the literature, that because the real singer, you hear it, no, when he or she sings. You have the... It is one. And I think it's not easy to accomplish that also in the practice of mantra. And maybe we will see also how that is possible, how we can get the consciousness in the beginning, as if these things all work together. There's a kind of integration necessary. That would be my suggestion, but one can see how we will finally end up and then how it will look in the Rig Veda in the bigger context, how they themselves put the mantra in a different context. So we will go back and see. Thanks a lot for your concentrated listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.